Today's daf is Shabbos daf Kuf Chav Gimel. We're going to pick up from the bottom of the page in daf Kuf Chav Beis and Beis at the two dots, about 7 lines from the bottom. Today we're going to discuss the following topics. Picking up from the Mishnah, which at the beginning of the parak, the Mishnah on Kuf Chav Beis and Beis allows a person to break nuts open with a hammer. So the Gemara is going to discuss what kinds of hammer. Is a blacksmith's hammer, a goldsmith's hammer, a spice maker's hammer? What kinds of hammer are allowed to be used for the purpose of breaking open nuts? Then Rav Nachman seem to have contradictory psakim whether it's permissible to move muksa in an indirect way, tiltul min atzad. So the Gemara is going to discuss that contradiction, come to a conclusion about tiltul min atzad. Although the Mishnah said that a needle can be used to remove a splinter, the Gemara is going to discuss the status of a needle whose eye was removed with regard to Hilchas Shabbos and with regard to Hilchas Tumah V'Taharah if it loses the status of a kli. Then we're going to get into a machlokas whether a person can straighten the limbs of a baby on Shabbos or if there's a problem of fixing a human body by straightening the limbs of a baby on Shabbos. And then the Gemara is going to go through the historical development of Hilchos Muktzah, how we got to the point where we are now in terms of how we relate to Klisha Melach Del Iser, how we relate to Klisha Melach Del Heter. So a lot of Muktzah discussion. Just it's important before we continue with the Muktzah discussion, a couple of simple Ha'aras. Just the Muktzah, as we know, is defined is anything that you haven't set aside from before Shabbos to be able to be used on Shabbos, something that you would have thought would not be usable for you on Shabbos. And originally, as we're going to see on Amud Beis toward the end of the daf, the original gzeira against muktzah was on almost everything that you couldn't use. This gzeira apparently was a pretty early gzeira. The Gemara in Shabbos that we had earlier on Daf Lamed implies that the isra of muktzah was already in effect in the days of David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech, so this is not something that was new in the days of Chazal. And there are three reasons suggested by the Rambam as to why it is that Chazal asserted Muktzah. The Rambam writes in the 24th parak of Hilchas Shabbos, Halacha Yud Beis, Asru Chacham Letaltal Muktzah Svarim B'Shabbos Kederek Shorosu B'chol. You're not allowed to be metaltal, to move certain items on Shabbos the way you would on a weekday. Umipnei Ma Nagu B'Yisrazeh. Why did they ask this? Amru, because the first reason, says the Rambam, is they reasoned as follows. Umayim hisiru neviim v'tzivu shlo yehi luchach b'shabbos ki luchach b'chol. V'lo sichas ha-shabbos ki sichas ha-chol. Shneim r'vedaber v'davar. If you're not supposed to walk on Shabbos the way you walk during a weekday, and you're not supposed to talk on Shabbos the way you talk during the week, so kal v'chomer shlo yeh tiltul b'shabbos, so certainly you shouldn't handle those things on Shabbos and move those things on Shabbos that you normally move during the week. So that it should not, Shabbos should not become like a weekday in a person's eyes. Because then you're going to end up moving kelim around and being masakin things. And you're going to end up sitting at home looking for things to do and doing all sorts of other things that will distract you from the primary purpose of Shabbos. Then the Rambam says in the next halacha, Va'od, kishayivak, v'yataltal kelim shomlach l'miser, when it comes to a klisha melach lel iser, using a hammer, let's say, so you're going to come to, if we allow you to be metaltal it for no reason at all, you're going to come to use it, and you're going to come to build things with it, and you'll come to violate various melachos. And then the Rambam seems to suggest another reason, which we sort of the Rambam writes va'od mepresha miktzas ha'am einum bali umnius ela betelin kol yemein. And this third reason, Rav Soloveitchik made a big deal about this third reason. He says, and he used it to explain a lot of halachos, the Rambam says, because most people, or not most, but some people, miktzas ha'am, some people are not bali umnius, some people don't have jobs, el betelim kol yemehen, they sit at home, kigon atayolin v'yoshe kranos, shekol yemehen hin shovsim imalacha, they never do malacha, v'miyamutu lahalich uledaber uletaltel kishari yamim. So if we were to let them behave like they do every other day, to speak the same way, walk the same way, deal with the same things they deal with every other day. Nimtza shalosh shavas shvisa hanikeres. That's the operative phrase. Shvisa hanikeres. It will turn out that they don't do melacha on Shabbos, but it's not going to be a shvisa hanikeres. It's not going to be recognizable that they're resting for the sake of Shabbos, because they're going to be not doing melacha on Shabbos the same way they don't do melacha during the week. So Chazal asked muktza so that when they don't do melacha on Shabbos, it will be evident that the reason they're not doing melacha is because it's Shabbos. And that's part of the how Rav Soloveitchik explained the relationship between the mitzvos aseh of Shabbos and the mitzvos los aseh of Shabbos, based on the Ramban. The Ramban also, that why is it that the mitzvos aseh we just had in yesterday's parsha, Zachar is Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, yet in parsha V'eschan it says Shomer is Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. So the Gemara links the mitzvah of Zechira to the mitzvah of Shmira. Zechira is Kiddush of Shabbos. Shmira is not to do Malacha on Shabbos. What's the connection? Kol Sheyeshno B'Shmira, Yeshno B'Zechira. Why do we assume that there's inherently a connection between the two of them? Or what is the connection between the two of them? So not only, like the Gemara says, anyone who's not allowed to do Malacha on Shabbos also is Chayiv and Kiddush on Shabbos, but it's more than that. In order to observe, to have Shmira Shabbos, where refrain from Malacha is going to be meaningful, it needs to be a refrain from Malacha that's evident that you're doing it L'Shem Shabbos. How do you make it evident that you're doing it L'Shem Shabbos? So one way, one important way on a Daraisa level, is by doing Zechiras Shabbos, is by saying Kiddush. So you're declaring at the beginning of the day, this day is special, and therefore all the Malacha I'm not going to be doing over the next 24 hours is not just a coincidence of my vacation schedule, it's because it's a special day and I don't do Malacha on this special day. That's what makes it a Shvisa Hanikeres. So the Rambam claims, the Rambam says that that's what's behind the idea of Muktza as well. The Ravid then adds that there may be a fourth reason, that maybe you're going to come to carry, that the Isra of Muktza is so that you don't come to carry things from Rishus Yachid into a Rishus Harabim. Okay, that's the basic background to Muktza. Let's see the details now in our Gemara. So I know you got up a little, you got up to a couple lines into Kufchav Gimel Menal, but it's easier to start from the two dots. So let's start from the two dots on Kufchav Beis and Beis. Notal Adam Kornis. So he said, the Mishnah said at the beginning of the parak, you're allowed to use a hammer to crack open nuts. Amrav Yudah, Kornish Shalagozin, Lefatzeh Bo Sayagozin. You're allowed to take a nutcracker, a hammer that's used to crack open nuts, for its purpose, to crack open nuts. Avul Shal Nafachin Lo. But you're not allowed to take a blacksmith's hammer and start cracking nuts with a blacksmith's hammer. Meaning, a blacksmith's hammer is a klishim lachtel iser. It's something that's normally used to do iser. And even though you're using it in a way that's for heter, you're not allowed to use it. So kasavar davar shemlachta l'isar filu tzaruch gufo aser. Apparently, we're assuming that when you have a klisha shemlachta l'isar, even to use it for the tzaruch gufo, for itself, for a mutter purpose, is going to be aser. Amrle rabba elameata seifa de katani. But if that's the case, what do we do with the seifa? The Mishnah goes on to say, es harachas ves hamalges lase salav l'katan, that a winnowing fork or a regular fork, you're allowed to use to give to serve something to a katan. Rachas amagis mimi yachti le katan. Those are things that are klishim lachdalis are also. Those are things that are normally used to do a davar aser with, and yet we allow using them for a davar amutter. What do you think? These items are made to serve a katan? No, they're made to do malacha, and yet we still allow you to do things letzorich gufa with them. Ella amaraba. When our Mishnah says you're allowed to use a hammer to break open nuts, it means you can use a blacksmith's hammer, you could use a builder's hammer, you could use a hammer that's a klisha melachta l'iser to break open nuts. That's one of the rules, a klisha melachta l'iser, that you're allowed to use it letzorach gufo kasavar. Davar shemelachta l'iser letzorach gufo mutter. That a klisha melachta l'iser may be used letzorach gufo. Esve abaye l'rabba, so abaye asan rabba, maducha im yesh. We learned that if you have a mortar, if it has garlic in it, then you're allowed to be metaltal, then it's not going to be mukta because you're moving the garlic. But if it doesn't have any garlic in it, you're not allowed to be metaltal. It says Rashi, why would you want to move it if it doesn't have any garlic? You want to use it to sit on. You want to use it for some mutter purpose on Shabbos. Still, you're not allowed to be metaltal because it is a kli shemalachta l'iser. So apparently, we see from here that a kli shemalachta l'iser, you're not allowed to move. even Litzarech Gufo. So Hamani Rabbi Nechemiah he. So Gemara said, no, that's assuming like the Shita of Rabbi Nechemiah. The Amar Ein Kli Nital Elo Litzarech Tashmisho. Rabbi Nechemiah has a unique Shita when it comes to a Kli Shemlach Lelisir, that a Kli can only be, or even a Kli Shemlach Lelheter, that a Kli can only be used for the Tashmish HaMiyuchad Lo. That you're only allowed to use any Kli for its designated purpose, not for anything else. So good, so Rabbi Nechemiah would say, you're not allowed to move a maducha if it doesn't have any garlic in it. But we would hold that you are allowed to, because we hold the klisha melach to the iser is allowed to be moved, litzorech gufo, if you need it, for its own sake. Eisvei, so frekta gemara, but we have a kasha on this from a mishnah, the shavin shim katzav alav basar sha'asalat altlo, that if you chopped meat on a chopping block, that it's asr to be metaltalit on yantiv. So don't you see, as Rashi explains, the kasha is the hay de kasharu beisil mishum simchas yomtov kasharu alma mishum daeli melach to liisr l'ktisha sragim v'tisti v'klipas etzim lavi ben oros aser, that only mishum simchas yomtov you're allowed to be mekatziv alav basar, but if you already were katziv alav basar, you're not allowed to be metaltalit. Apparently everyone agrees that once something is a klisha melach to liisr, you're not allowed to be metaltalit litzarech gufo. So savalishnui like Rabbi Nechemiah. Our first gut reaction was to say, okay, that's also going like Rabbi Nechemiah. Rabbi Nechemiah is the one that says that you're only allowed to move things for their tzorech, for their normal purpose. So maybe that's also going like Rabbi Nechemiah. We don't pasuk like Rabbi Nechemiah, so you could easily knock that out. Says Gemara, no. Kivan de Shama Lahadam Rav Chinan Bar Shlamya. Once we heard the sheet of Rav Chinan Bar Shlamya, we have a better answer. We're going to be able Mishmei Derav. We're going to have a better answer to explain that Mishnah. Because what did he say? That Akol Modim Besichi Zairi Umazuri. Everyone agrees by certain types of kelim. What types of kelim are these? Rashi has two shitos. First, kleit sabayin hein. Rashi says these are a dyer's kelim, someone who dyes things. These are kelim that he would use in his work. And then Rashi quotes for Rabbeinu Alevi Piresh, clay organ, that these are a weaver's kelim. Kelim that a weaver would use in his work. Either way, whether it's a dyer's kelim or they are weaver's kelim, both dyeing and weaving are usher to do on Shabbos. And therefore, these kelim are kelim shemalachdam le'isser. So what do we say? That kelim shemalachdam le'isser, dekivan dekapet alai, but these are unique kinds of kelim shemalachdam le'isser, dekivan dekapet alaihu miyachlu makom. Since a person is makbit about them, meaning he would never use these items for anything else other than their designated purpose, so he's miyachid makom. He designates a specific place where he wouldn't move it out of that place because he wants to make sure these kelim are protected so that when he needs them for what they're meant for, he will have access to them and they won't be ruined. Hachanami miyachidu makom. So over here also, maybe we could say the same thing about the maducha. Why are you not allowed to move, or the same thing rather about the eli that you were kotziv basar on. Why are you not allowed to move it? Because you're miyachid makom. Because you designate a place for it. So everybody agrees. So we can still say that this Mishnah agrees that a Kli Shemlach Lelisser, normally you are allowed to move Litzarech Gufo, but we're introducing a new concept over here, that when you wouldn't use it for anything else, you never would use it for anything else, then it becomes Muktzah. And that concept is what we call Muktzah Machmas Chesrom Kis. That Muktzah Machmas Chesrom Kis doesn't have to mean that something is extremely expensive. It means something you would never move for any other purpose, something you would generally not use, I should say, for any other purpose, because you want it available to you. You know, you're afraid to ruin it. And even Rabbi Shimon agrees about Muktzah Machmas Chesrom Kis. Remember, we had discussions about Rabbi Shimon having a much more liberal view of Muktzah, much more makel view of Muktzah. But even Rabbi Shimon would agree Muktzah Machmas Chesrom Kis would be a problem. In order for something to be Muktzah Machmas Chesrom Kis, it seems that you need two criteria. First, it needs to be a Kli Shemlach Lelisser. It has to be a Kli Shemlach Lelisser to begin with. The only thing is, if it were just a Kli Shemlach Lelisser, it would be Mutal Tzarek Kufal Tzarek Mekamel, like we just saw in our Gemara. But then the second criteria is that you wouldn't use it for any other purpose. That raises it to the level of Muktzah Machmas, Chesron, Kis. Now, there are other potential criteria that are discussed. Does it have to be fragile? Does it have to be something that could be easily ruined? So that doesn't really seem to fit the examples in the Mishnah. So maybe we could suggest that you just wouldn't want to risk breaking or ruining it, even if it's not particularly fragile. It doesn't have to be something that necessarily it's a reasonable concern that it's going to get ruined. But if that's how people treat it, that people wouldn't use it for other things because they're afraid, like let's say a shochet is very, very particular about his knives. Even if the knife, they don't want it out of the case when they're not using it. What are the chances if you leave it in the drawer that it's going to get ruined? It's out of the case. It's not going to get a nick in it just because it's in the drawer. But that's the way they're very, very careful about it. So it doesn't have to be a reasonable concern. Something that a person would not move because they're afraid of breaking. It has to do with human psychology. It has to do with whether a person is makta midaito. Does it have to be expensive? The Rambam in the 25th parak of Hilchos Shabbos Halacha Tes does mention the idea that it should be expensive. In order to be Muktzah Machmas Chesron Kis, the Magen Avraham and Siman Shin Ches implies this way, but the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah don't mention this at all, that it has to be expensive. Probably being expensive is just an example of why an owner would be makbid about something like this. Probably there's not a halachic requirement that it would have to be expensive. Similar to Rav Moshe and Igros Moshe, in Igros Moshe or Chaim Chelekei, Simul Chav Beis, Osyid Beis, Rav Moshe says, even being miyachid makom, the idea that our Gemara says, that miyachid luhu makom, you designate a place for it. It doesn't have to be that you designate a place for something in order for it to be Muktzah Machmas Chesron Kis. That's more of a simen. It's a simen that it's Muktzah Machmas Chesron Kis if it's the type of thing that you would designate a place for, because that's obviously something that you're taking great care to be careful about and not to move. So there is a discussion in the Achronim. What about something that you wouldn't normally move because you don't want to ruin it, but it's a kli shemlachta laheter? What if you have, let's say, what if it's not a kli shemlachta lister? What if you have plates that you sell for a living? You have a store that you run out of your basement, let's say. So you have in your house this store with fancy plates or something. And then at your Shabbos table, you realize you want plate short, so you want to go take one of the plates from your store. So you normally would never mess around with the merchandise because you don't want to crack or break any of the merchandise and you're not going to be able to sell it. But on the other hand, it's not a klisha mlach talis, it's a klisha mlach talaheter. The Ramban, Simen Shin Ches, Sif Aleph, doesn't explicitly say that klisha mlach talam laheter are usher, but Achronim assume that that's what he means, that even if it's klisha mlach talam laheter, if it's merchandise, something that you're planning on selling, that it would be a problem. And even if you change your mind, Rabbi Kivyager points out, because it's migud diskatzai, once it became muktzah ben hashmash, so it remains muktzah for the rest of Shabbos. So others say b'shem Rosh Zalman, I think, in one of the muktzah svarim. Now let's say you have something that you want to return to a store after Shabbos, so that may also be muktzah machmas chesron kis, because it's not something that you would normally be metalta because you're afraid to ruin it. If you want to return it and get your money back, unless it's a store that accepts ruined merchandise back, you know, if you're returning it to Costco, maybe it would be different, because you know you could return anything at any time. But if you're returning something to a store that cares, so then l'chaara would become muktzah machmas chesron kis. So there are many examples you can come up with. Rav Moshe had an interesting tshuva to Rabbi Badner. When Rabbi Badner wrote his Muktzah Sefer, he asked Rav Moshe to give, if he should give a list of the common Muktzah Machmas Chesron Kis. And he said, no, you shouldn't give any list because it changes. It changes over time. If when cell phones were first coming out, everyone would have agreed that a cell phone is definitely Muktzah Machmas Chesron Kis. You would never use it as a paperweight. You would never do anything else with it other than use it as a phone. But cell phones are so cheap nowadays. They have, and you lose it, they'll just give you a new one sometimes if you have the right plan or whatever. So sometimes people are a little more careless with it. They're not so makbid not to use it for things. It really depends on the situation. It maybe depends on what kind of phone you have. How new a model of a phone you have. So it's hard to give. There are certain things that are obvious. Driver's license. So that's certainly a passport. That's a muktzah machmas chesron kis. You would never want to use it unless you need it, because you wouldn't. you wouldn't take out your driver's license to use as a to underline things in a book or to I don't know, to pick a lock or something like that, because you wouldn't want to ruin that kind of document. Okay. So says the Gemara Vayter, Itmar, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Korner Shel Zav. Now we're going to discuss what type of hammer is included in the heter in our Mishnah that we said you're allowed to use a hammer to crack open nuts. So Itmar, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Korner Shel Zav Mshaninu, that a goldsmith's hammer you're allowed to use to crack open nuts. Rabbi Shem bar Abba, Amar Korner Shel Besam Mshaninu, a spice hammer, something that you chop spices with. If you hold that a spice hammer can be used, then certainly a goldsmith's hammer can be used. If you hold that a goldsmith's hammer could be used, maybe you wouldn't be able to use a spice hammer because that you might be more makbid on it, that it shouldn't get dirty. So you're not going to want to ruin it because it will ruin the taste of the spices that you're going to use. So a spice maker's hammer, if a person is very particular not to use it for other things, may be worse than using a goldsmith's hammer. That's the ha'ara of the Gemara. That's what this machloka samaraim is going to have enough gemina. They're not just stam giving examples. The Mishnah went on to say vesakush vesakarkar, that a spindle and a weaver's reed were examples given in the Mishnah. So says the Gemara. Tan Rabbanan, Paga Shetamna Beteven, the Harara Shetamna Begachalim. If you have a fig that's ripening in sand, let's say, that you put it in the sand, it's ready to picked from the tree, it's not attached to the ground anymore, you put it in sand to help it ripen. Or Harara, a wafer Shetamna Begachalim, that you put in coals. In Megula Miktsasa, if some of it, so what's the issue over here? The issue is that it's being covered with something that's muktzah. Sand is muktzah. Coals are muktzah. So how do you access the food when it's surrounded and covered by items that are muktzah? So im magula muktzasa mutalataltala. If a little bit of it is exposed, then you're allowed to be metaltalit. If some of it is sticking out of the ground, let's say, out of the sand, you can pull it from the part that's sticking out of the sand and take it that way. V'imlav also letaltala, but otherwise, you're not going to be allowed to move it. Rav Elazar ben Tadai Omer, tochvin bekush o bekarkar, vehim menaros me'alehim. He holds that you could take a weaver spindle and spear it, or a reed, and spear it, and stab it, and allow the, and pull it out that way, and even if it's completely covered in sand, the sand will fall away as you're pulling it out. So imagine taking a fork and sticking it into the ground, into the fig, and then pulling up the fig, and all the sand along the side of it will fall away. Amar Rav Nachman, Halacha Rav Elazar ben Tadai. We passing like Rav Elazar ben Tadai, that you're allowed to do this. Now, what's the issue over here? Why would it be usur? What's the discussion? So this discussion is about tiltul min atzad, meaning are you allowed to move something in an indirect way? Because you are definitely moving the sand over here. You're definitely moving the muktzah, but you're moving it min hatzad. You're moving it in an indirect way by picking up the fig and allowing the other things to fall apart. So that's what we have this machlokas about, that the Tanakam apparently holds tiltul min atzad is usur. Rav Elazar ben Tadai apparently holds it's mutter. So not Tanakam. So says the Gemara, So says the Gemara. Lememra the Savar of Nach, and Rav Nachman holds like Rav Elazar ben Tadai that it's mutter. So says the Gemara. Lememra the Savar of Nachman tiltum atzad lo shmei tiltul. What? Rav Nachman holds that tiltum atzad is mutter. Vam Rav Nachman hay puglu mi lemala lemata shari mi mata lemala asir. Didn't Rav Nachman? Doesn't Rav Nachman himself hold that if you have something in the ground that it depends which way it's sitting in the ground. If you have a radish that's detached from the ground, but you have it buried in the ground, again, for whatever reason, you're matmin it in the earth, and the top of the radish is sticking out. So milamala lamatashari, since the radish is wider at top than it is at the bottom, you could pull it out from the top because none of the surrounding dirt is going to be moved when you pull it out, because it gets narrow as it goes deeper into the ground. So when you pull it out, nothing moves. But if it's narrow, if it's upside down, so when you're pulling it out, you're pulling it from its narrow edge, so as the wider edge comes out of the ground, it's shoving dirt out of the way, and you're actually moving, you're moving dirt as you're pulling it up. That's usur. Why is that usur? It's tiltul min atzad, apparently, and Rav Nachman holds tiltul min atzad is usur. So how can Rav Nachman say we pass Rav Elazar ben Tadai? Isn't he the one that says tiltul min atzad is usur? Says the Gemara, Hadabir Rav Nachman Meahi. He changed his mind. He later on, originally held Tiltul Min HaTzad is Aser, then he changed his mind and he now holds that Tiltul Min HaTzad is Mutter. Now the entire discussion of Tiltul Min HaTzad assumes that the item that it rests on is not classified as a basis, and that niyur is not possible, meaning Tiltul Min HaTzad would only be if let's say we talk about Tiltul Min HaTzad is, let's say something's on the chair, something muktza is on the chair, can I move the chair? So I'm not moving the muktza item itself, I'm just moving the chair that it's on. So the discussion only begins if the chair is not a basis. So how's the chair not a basis if a muktza item was on it the whole time? So we learned a couple of days ago that if I was shocheach, I didn't put the item on a chair on purpose, I forgot it, I left the iPod on the chair before Shabbos, so the chair doesn't become a basis because I didn't put it there b'kavana. So then we get into the discussion of Tiltul Min HaTzad. I left on my bed, I forgot, I left something on my covers on my bed and I want to go to sleep now, I left my cell phone, my iPod, whatever on my bed, so am I allowed to be metaltel min HaTzad? Can I pick up the cover from and remove it that way and remove the muktza item that way? So Shulchan Aruch writes Simin Shin Yud Aleph Si'iv Ches that Tiltul Min HaTzad cannot be moved l'tzorech ha-muktza, but it can be moved l'tzorech ha-heter. So let's say I leave money on a chair. I'm allowed to move the chair if I'm trying to clear the chair out of the room. But if I'm just trying to get rid of the money or to protect the money, I'm doing it l'tzorech l'muktza, then I'm not allowed to do Tiltul Min HaTzad. That it depends on what my kavana is, whether I'm doing it for the muktza or I'm doing it for the heter. So that is then there's a discussion in the Achronim why it's mutter l'tzorech davra mutter when I'm doing it for the heter. Chazanish implies that we view the tiltul as relating to the davra mutter, meaning I'm moving two things. When the chair is money and I'm moving the chair, I'm moving two things. I'm moving the chair, I'm moving the money. If my kavanah is primarily for the chair, so we view it as if I'm moving a chair. If my kavanah is primarily for the money, so we view it as if I'm moving money. So the Chazanish says that's why l'tzorech the chair, it's mutter, l'tzorech the money, it's going to be aser. The Mishnah Berurah and Shin Tesef Katnyud implies that it's a special, or says that it's a special leniency l'tzorech Shabbos, since you're not moving it directly. That when it's l'tzorech Shabbos, then it's a special kula that we have. But if it's not l'tzorech Shabbos, so then why would we be making it? It's regular iser of muktza. This is the concept of tiltul min HaTzad. We're going to see later on in Daf Kuf Mem Aleph, there's another concept of tiltul begufo. What if you? It's not that you're moving the muktza by not directly contacting the muktza. That's tiltul min HaTzad. But you're not moving it with your hands in the normal way that you would move muktza. Let's say your body comes into direct physical contact with the muktza, but you're moving it by rolling around or by moving your body in a certain way without actually touching with your hand. That's also a discussion, but that's a little bit different than regular tiltul min HaTzad. There's also, like we mentioned before, there's niur. There's shaking something off without actually moving it. If something is on a board, can you just shake off the board? So Mishmur and Shintesiv Katan Yud says that if possible, you need to do niur instead of tiltul min HaTzad. This way, you won't have to carry it at all. So sometimes a person would prefer to do tiltul min HaTzad because he doesn't want to shake off he has his iPad on his bed. He doesn't want to shake it off. He's afraid the screen's going to crack if he shakes it off. It would be much better for him if he could just pick up the cover that it's on, put it down gently on the floor. But even near, you're not allowed to do for the sake of the muktza item itself. Only if you're doing it l'tzorech the davar ahetar. Okay, let's see weiter. Machat shel yad litolba. So we said a needle, a hand held needle, you're allowed to use to take out a splinter. So shalach le rava berei de rabbi l'rav Yosef. L'amden rabenu. Machat shel nitol charora uktza mahu. What if a needle whose eye or point was removed? What's the din? Amalei tenisua, machat shaliyad litol ba'asakotz. It says beferish in the Mishnah that you're allowed to use a machat shaliyad to take out a splinter. V'chima ichpad le'lakotz be'nekuva le'bein she'ena nekuva. If for the purpose of taking out a splinter, you don't care if the eye of the needle is still there. So obviously we must be talking about a needle, we could even be talking about a needle that doesn't have an eye of the needle, doesn't have a place where you could thread the needle, because you don't care. It's about removing a splinter. So esvei machat, so says Gemara, wait a second, machat shenitel chararo uksa tahora. But we learn in the laws of tumen tahara that once a machat is lost its point or the eye of the needle, so then it's going to be tahar. It's no longer a kli. So don't you see that it's not a kli, therefore it should be muktza? So Amar Abaye, Tuma, Shabbos Karamis. You're asking a stira between Tuma and Shabbos. Tuma klei maisa bi'inan. Linin Shabbos midi duchazi bi'inan. Vahanami chazi, lemishka laba, coats. Totally different issue. With regard to Tuma, only something formed has a status of a kli. So the needle without the eye doesn't qualify. With regard to Shabbos, anything that's usable is considered a kli, including a needle without an eye. A needle without an eye is usable to take out a splinter. So therefore, it's considered a kli. Legabi hilchus Shabbos, not considered a kli. Legabi hilchus tumah v'tahara. That's one answer. Second answer, Amar Rava. Rava says, no, manda kamosiv, shapir kamosiv. Rava says, don't reject the kasha so quickly. It's a good kasha. Midilin in tumah lav manahulin Shabbos nami lav manahu. From the fact that by tumah, it's considered not a kli, so by Shabbos also, it's not considered a kli. Meaning, Rava rejects Rav Yosef, that anything that isn't considered a kli for tumah purposes is also not considered a kli for Shabbos purposes. So essentially, what Rav is telling you is that even though Rav Yosef tried to be mechadesh, that a needle whose eye or point was taken is not a muktzah problem, and Abaye defended that psak of Rav Yosef by saying, yeah, I understand it's not a kli for tumah, but it's still a kli legabi hilchus Shabbos, and it's not a muktzah problem. Rav says Rav Yosef is wrong. It is a muktzah problem. If it's not a kli for tumah, then it's not a kli for Shabbos. It is in fact a muktzah problem. Meisvei machad bein nukuva bein shein nukuva mutal tatal b'Shabbos. Wait a second, Rava, how could you say that a needle that lost its point or lost its eye is a muktzah problem? We see beferish that a needle bein nukuva bein shein nukuva is not a muktzah problem. V'lo amru nukuva linyan tumah b'lvad. When does it matter if you have the ability to thread the needle, if it has the eye of the needle? That's only in the world of tumah. So now Rava, checkmate on Rava. Abaye says, you see, right? I'm right, because apparently it makes a difference whether it doesn't make a difference in Hilchas Shabbos whether it's nukuva or not nukuva. It's only a linyan tumah. So Rava, you're wrong. You can't say that Shabbos and tumah are necessarily related to each other. So here you have the unusual circumstance where Abaye defends Rava's shita, even though Abaye is vindicated by this raya. Abaye defends how Rava's going to deal with it. So Tirgama Abaye aliba de Rava begul mi askinan. Abaye says we're dealing with unfinished needles, which would not be a kli for tumah, but would not be muktzi either, since they can easily be used for removing splinters. Zimnin de mimlechalayu mashvi lumana. You may change your mind and make it into and use it as is without the eye, and never want to make an eye in it to be able to remove splinters. Aval hechel de nital charara uktza. But if it once was finished, it already had its point formed or its eye formed in it, and then it got ruined. Then a person would just throw it in the garbage. You throw it with the other broken pieces of metal, with other scrap metal, that you would just get rid of it. So therefore, that could be the case. The case where we're going to say that a needle is not a kli legabe tumah, but is also not a problem of muktzah on Shabbos, is an unfinished kli that you may decide never to finish and to use for Shabbos. But if it was a kli that was once finished and then lost its point or lost its eye, then it would be the Rava would tell you the halachos of muktzah and the halachos of tumah. The halachos of Shabbos and the halachos of tumah have to be aligned with each other. If it's not a kli linyan tumah, it's not a kli linyan Shabbos, and therefore would be muktzah. Period. Next conversation. Asuva Yanuka. Asuva Yanuka, says Rashi, means lahachlik seder evarav kshu nola, to take a baby and align his limbs to make sure that his limbs are all in place properly. In the Hagos Vitziunim on the side of the page over here in my Gemara, it says ba'aruch piresh. The aruch has a completely different pshat. It says kishenafla Orlas Hagaron Shaltinok, Masima Chayatz Ba Bepiv, Umasalekas Osa Orla, Upam Shemeki Atinok, that sometimes the baby's unable to breathe, they have to suction out the liquid from the baby's mouth, so as soon as the baby comes out, the baby's able to breathe. That's what we're talking about, that when the baby's born, to suction him out so that he's going to be able to breathe properly. So Asuva Yanuka, Rav Nachman Asir, two different pshatim what it means. Let's stick with Rashi for now, but we'll see in a second why the Aruch says what he says. Rav Nachman Asir, Rav Shesha Shari. Rav Nachman says it's Asir, Rav Shesha says Mutter. Rav Nachman Mina Amina. Rav Nachman says, where do I get the idea that it's Asir? Ditnan, because it says in the Mishnah, Ein Osin Apuk Tavizin, B'Shabbos, a person is not allowed to use something that makes him throw up on Shabbos. So he says, this is the same thing. You're fixed. So the way Rashi understands it is, just like Apuk Tavizin, it's not really for medicinal reasons. You're not doing it because you're ill or anything that you need to throw up. But a person, let's say, knows that he's going to be eating, he comes home from shul and his wife tells him, oh, we're eating by so-and-so, and he knows, oh, that's the best cook. I want to be able to eat everything that she makes, but I'm already full because I ate too much at the Kiddush. So he wants to empty his stomach to make room, to make room so he'll be able to eat everything later. So that's why he would do Apuk Tavizin, to clear his stomach out so that he'll be able to eat whatever he wants. An interesting trick. So anyway, so he you're not supposed to do that on Shabbos. Einos not Apuk Tavizin on Shabbos, even though it's not refuah. What is it? It's being misakin. You're being misakin the body. The person's being misakin himself by clearing out all the junk so that he'll be able to eat properly. So the same thing with being misadded the baby, with arranging the limbs of the baby. You're being misakin the baby. Now we appreciate why the Aruch said that this is about clearing out the baby's throat, because clearing out the baby's throat is about making the baby vomit. It's about making the baby cough out whatever is in it. So you could relate that a little bit closer to making up the vizin. But anyway, that's how Rashi says Rav Sheshes, and Rav Sheshes would say no big difference. Hasam lav urche, hacha urche. Apuk Tavizin is a very unnatural thing to do, so that's you're not allowed to do. But over here, you're just straightening the baby out. That's a much more normal thing to do. It's a normal maintenance of the body, similar as we're going to see to removing splinters. Am Rav Sheshes mina aminah ditanan. Rav Sheshes says, how do I know that it's mutter? Ditanan machad shaliyad litol ba'asakot. You're allowed to remove a splinter on Shabbos. Why aren't we calling that you're being misakin the body, and you're not allowed to be misakin the body on Shabbos? No, this is normal maintenance of a human body, is that if there's a splinter, you take it out. If the baby needs to be straightened out a little, you straighten him out. Rav Nachman would say a big difference between the splinter and the baby. Hasam pakid hachalo pakid. By the splinter, it's a foreign substance that's in the baby, that's not really part of the baby. That's not really part of the person. By straightening the baby's limbs, it's the baby itself that you're actually fixing. So that's much more of a tikkun. Pocket over here, Rashi says, similar to, he doesn't give the example, but similar to like in Ksubas where we say Dam Mifkat Pocket, where we mean that it's like separate, it's not part of the circulatory system, it's Mifkat, it's like in a separate compartment. So that's what Pocket means, that it's similar to Malacha when it's low Pocket, but Pocket means that it's Nasun Sham, it's just placed there and you're just taking out something that happens to be there. New Mishnah. Kanish al Zaysim Yesh Kesher Barosha Makabal Tuma, Vimla Vein Makabal Tuma, Bein Kach Nital Bishabis. A cane that's used to soften olives. So they would soften the olives before they would press them, because if you want to get really good olive oil out of the olives, they need to be good and soft for when they're pressed. So a cane that's used for softening olives, if it has a knot at one end of the cane, then it's Makabal Tuma, and it's not considered Pshute Kliates, meaning we consider this to be something that's a real Kli, that's Makabal Tuma. It's considered to have a receptacle. We'll see why it's considered to have a receptacle in a second, but if it doesn't have a knot at the end of it, so then it's just plain pshute kliyetz, it's just a stick, it's a flat wooden stick, and therefore it's not mekabel tumah. Either way, it's nital b'Shabbos. You're allowed to move it on Shabbos. So, frakta gemara, amai pshute kliyetzu. Even if it does have a knot, isn't it just pshute kliyetz? Because, after all, what defines something as not being pshute kliyetz, as not being just a flat wooden stick? It needs to have what's called a base kibble. It needs something where, a receptacle, where something can be kept. Just because it has a knot at the end as a handle, what could be kept in the handle? Nothing's kept in the handle. So, frakta gemara, pshute kliyetz, and mekabel tumah. After all, pshute kliyetz, not mekabel tumah. My taima, dum yud sak bina. Because in order for anything to be makabel tumah, it has to be similar to sack. It has to be similar to a bag that has a base kibble. So answers Gemara. Tana mishpeitz Rabbi Nechemia b'shal shemahapich b'zesim hovcha v'robo. Now if it has a knot at the end, when you turn it upside down, some of the oil will drip down into the handle, and therefore the handle will turn into a receptacle. So essentially, the way it's used is that the handle becomes a base kibble, and that's why it's not pshutei kliyetz, because the handle can catch some some of the oil, when you turn it upside down, it forms a small receptacle. Next Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi Yomar Kol Kelim Nitan L'Chutz Min HaMesra Gadol V'Yasei Shel Macharisha. Rabbi Yossi holds a large saw and the blade of a plow are the only Kelim that you're not allowed to move on Shabbos. So these are both issues of Muktzah Machmas Chesrom Kis. These are examples of Muktzah Machmas Chesrom Kis. Amar Rav Nachman, Hai Uchla Dekatri Ki Yaseid Shel Macharisha Damya. This Uchla Dekatri, something that's used by a copper kli that was that had a lot of holes on it, that was used by a launderer when he would launder garments, is like the Yaseid Shel Macharisha Damya. It's also Muktzah Machmas Chesrom Kis. You would never use it for anything else. Amar Abaye, Charva du Ushkafi, a tanner's knife, v'sakina da ashkafta, a butcher's knife, v'chatzina de nagri, and a carpenter's chatzina, some type of kli that a carpenter would use. Ki yeset shal machrisha dami. All of these things are also examples of muktzah machmas chesrom kis. These are things that people use for their work, and they would never use for anything else but their work, and therefore it becomes muktzah on Shabbos. Tan rabbanan bari. So here for the rest of the daf, what we're going to do is we're going to outline the historical development of muktzah, how muktzah came to be what it is today, how the halachos of muktzah are what they are today. Tana Rabbanan, Barishono Yom Shlosha Kelim Nitalim B'Shabbos. Originally, what they said is that when they made up the dinim of muktzah, they said everything's muktzah, the whole world, every kli is muktzah except for three specific items that you're allowed to move on Shabbos. Miktzah Shel Devela, something that they would use to cut a fig cake. Vizama listeron shel kedera, and some item that they would use for taking the foam off of the top of a pot. Visakin ketana shel gabi shulchan, and the small knife that you would keep on a table. Then hitiru, then they were matir a little more. Vechazru vitiru, they were matir a little more. Vechazru vitiru, they were matir a little more. Ad sharmu, till they finally arrived at the conclusion, kol hakelim nitolim b'Shabbos. Most kelim are you're allowed to move on Shabbos. They were matir so much that it became from everything being usher except for three to almost everything being mutter. Chutz min mesar gadol v'yaseid shel macharisha, except for these items that we list in the Mishnah, which are muktzah machmas chesron kis. So says Gemara, mai hitiru v'chazer v'hitiru v'chazer v'hitiru. The Brisa refers to three stages where they were matir more and more and more. So what were these three stages where they were matir a little bit, then a little more, then a little more? So two opinions. Amrav, and the two opinions leave us in different places in terms of what the halacha is nowadays. So Amrav Baye, Baye says as follows: hitiru davar shemlachta laheter l'tzoruch gufo. First thing they were matir is a kli shemlachta laheter, a fork, a knife, a plate, anything you would use for things that are mutter to use on Shabbos, for mutter to do on Shabbos, a chair, a table. Whenever it's l'tzorich gufo, when you're using it for its own sake, you're allowed to move it. But stam, just to move a fork around for no reason, no, that's still lasser. Only if it's if you're using l'tzorich gufo. Then the second stage was v'chazur v'yitiru davar shel machta l'heter l'tzorich makomo. Then they allowed you to move it if you need the space that it's occupying. But again, only kli shemlachto l'heter, something that's normally used for heter, you're allowed to move. And then v'chazur v'yitiru davar shel machta l'iser l'tzorich gufo. Then they said you're allowed to move a kli shemlachto l'iser l'tzorich gufo if you need it. But l'tzorich gufo in l'tzorich makomo lo. Only if you need it, not if you need the space that it's occupying. And therefore, according to Abaye, it's still usher to move a kli shemlachta l'iser l'tzorich makomo. V'adayin, and still biyado achasin b'shtei yadav lo. With one hand, you can, but not with two hands. Ad sh'amru kol hakelim nitolim b'shabbos v'afil b'shtei yadayim. Until they later said that you're allowed to move kelim even with two hands. Amar le Rava, so Rava says to Abaye, michti, hitiru katani, mali l'tzorich gufo, mali l'tzorich makomo. When we say hitiru, how could it mean that they were only matir l'tzorich gufo at one time and not l'tzorich makomo? Why should there be any difference between l'tzorich gufo and l'tzorich makomo? So Rava says no. The process of how muktzah became what it is today is as follows. Ela amar Rava. First step was hitiru davar shemlachta l'heter bein l'tzorich gufo bein l'tzorich makomo. First step was to be matir forks, knives, plates, chairs, tables, both l'tzorich gufo and l'tzorich makomo. V'chazru v'yitiru mecham l'tzel. Then they were matir to even move it to protect the item. If it was in the sun and it was going to get ruined in the sun, you want to move it into the shade. You're allowed to do that also. V'chazru v'yitiru. Then the third step was davar shemlachta l'iser l'tzorich gufo l'tzorich makomo in mecham l'tzel lo. That a kli shemlachta l'iser you're allowed to move if you need it or if you need the space that it's taking up. But if you look in the backyard and you see ayvei, it's going to snow today, and my kli shemlachta l'iser is going to get ruined, well, you don't need the spot that it's on, you don't need it, you just want to put it in the shed to save it, to protect it, that's no good. You're not allowed to do that. va'adayin ba'adam echad in b'shnei b'nei adam lo, and still, even with all these heterim, it was only permissible to move al yaday one person, but not with two people. Ad sha'amru, until they came along, they said, kol ha'kelim litalim b'shabbos, afilu b'shnei b'nei adam, that all kelim could be moved on Shabbos, even with shnei b'nei adam, even with two people. Eisvei Abayis, Abayi asks on Rav as follows, Maduchem Yesh Pashum Metaltanos Avim Lavei Metaltanos. So we said at the beginning of today's daf that if you have a mortar, only if it has garlic in it, are you allowed to be metaltalid? Otherwise, you're not allowed to. So don't you see that because Klisham Lachta Leisser, even Litzorach Kufal, even Litzorach Mekomo, you're not allowed to move it? So the answer is Rav, no. Hachem Ayaskinan Mechamel Itzel. Remember, I told you that you're not allowed to move a Klisham Lachta Leisser Mechamel Itzel to protect it. That must be what we're talking about. Not where you want to use it, not where you need its place, but where you're just moving it, mechamel itself. So that's taka still aser to move a klisham lachlisr for that purpose. We also had this case earlier in the daf, the thing that you chop the meat on that you're not allowed to be metalto. So he says, hachanam mechamel itself. That's also talking about mechamel itself, moving it from chama to tzel. So any price that doesn't permit moving klisham lachlisr, Abaye will say, yeah, that price is talking about moving it litzorach mekomo, because you're not allowed to move a klisham lachlisr litzorach. But Rav is always going to interpret any such brisa to be talking about mechamel itzel, because he holds that mechamel itzel is the only reason that one would not be allowed to move a klisha melachto le iser. Okay, Bez Hashem, we'll discuss tomorrow in Nechemya ben Chakalia when all this took place. Okay.